And welcome to an audio cast from AvWeb, the Internet's general aviation news service and magazine for this Monday, February 18th, 2008. Brought to you by IFR Refresher, a monthly review of IFR rules and procedures designed to hone your skills and reinforce your knowledge. With Diamond and Cessna on board, the German-based Thielert Group dominates the aerodiesel market, but Teledyne Continental would like to change this and has announced its intention to aggressively develop its own heavy fuel or Jet A engine for certification possibly as early as 2009. In this detailed podcast, TCM's Rhett Ross recently told aviation consumer editor Paul Bertarelli that the company will ground demonstrate a diesel later this year or early next year.
We're speaking today with Rhett Ross, who is a newly installed president of Teledyne Continental Motors. Thanks for being with us today, Rhett.
Thank you for having me.
You've come over from Teledyne's energy systems business to take over the motors division. What's your general background and experience, and how about any interest or experience in light aircraft general aviation?
I'm a twice-degree engineer with a first degree in nuclear engineering and a master's in mechanical engineering, and I've been out in industry for 21 years now. I graduated from the University of Florida and immediately went into the U.S. Navy as a officer in the submarine service, and after that I went into industry, first working for a startup company developing fuel cell technology for the automotive industry. And after that, I've spent the balance of my career, now going on 8 years, with Teledyne, managing their engineering services businesses. I have, until I took over this position, no experience in the general aviation industry, although I've told a few other folks I don't see that as a weakness. I've been excited to come in here, and given my background in mostly nuclear energy, I like in many aspects of what I've spent my career doing, both in the Navy operating in a 3D submerged environment and operating in an environment that requires extraordinarily high quality and focus on safety, to the same things that you need in the general aviation industry.
Do you plan to learn to fly?
I took my first training flight on Sunday.
Well, congratulations. What are you flying?
Cessna 150 that we have here at Continental Motors, and I have to say it was a very interesting experience. We did a nice 2.5-hour ground session and then went out and spent another good half hour just on the boundaries of the or the taxiways of the runway, making sure I had some other basics down, and then we got one brief flight before some weather. We've had a front coming through Mobile, and we took the safe route and decided we'd wait to a clearer day for a more extended flight. But it was quite interesting and quite fun.
A little different than a submarine, isn't it?
Well, I have to say, everything came at me very fast, so I'm looking for another flight where we have a little bit more time in the air so I can get a true feel for things.
Our market surveys indicate that TCM dominates the high-performance piston segment with the IO 550 series, but it's not as strong at the lower displacement end. In general, what's your current view of the market vitality and health across the board, and is there any growth to be had in any of these segments?
I think right now the vitality is, for the industry, is pretty stable. I think everybody is watching to see what the economy really does. This minor or major credit crisis, depending on your viewpoint, could have some impact, I think. But I think the industry is moving in the right directions, looking more and more at international markets, looking at better, more effective airplanes, requiring more and better engine technologies. I think there are growth areas for Teledyne. I think they relate to ensuring that we satisfy customer requirements in the near term, and in the long term, I think, based on your questions, they really do relate to advanced technologies and getting electronic controls out into industry, out into the airplanes, and getting alternative fuels out there.
That segues nicely into my next question. The last time I was at Mobile was about not quite 2 years ago. The company has invested, and I assume continues to invest, in modern physical plant, including CNC lines and automotive-style statistical control. Where does that project stand? Is the investment ongoing, and will the plant eventually look like a modern Japanese auto plant?
Basically, we're investing very heavily and people, because that's the most important aspect of this equation across the board. We've got to have the right people on the machines and the right managers, and I cannot begin to tell you how happy we are with the quality of automotive experienced managers that we've been able to find and retain as the U.S. auto industry goes through some problems. They have had a huge impact on improvements within our plant in leaning out operations, really looking at how to effectively get good flow and high quality parts, and to really bring our rank and file people into the equation on driving improvement in processes and quality levels. We are also continuing to invest in new equipment and modernization. We just placed orders at the beginning of this year for a number of new advanced machines to further benefit our crankshaft line, our crankcase lines, and generally help improve assembly and testing processes.
Will that kind of investment actually reduce the factory square footage? When I was there last, the square footage had been reduced quite a bit by CNC machinery that would do multiple operations. Is that a continuing trend?
That is a continuing trend right now, and I'm not familiar with how much you saw, but we're effectively operating, I'd say, 90% of our production now in one main building, and within that one main building, I have probably 20,000-25,000 square feet of wide open space that we've cleared out that we'll be using to relay some lines out, and really what that'll net us is probably we'll continue to grow and have maybe 30,000-40,000 square feet of open space as we continue to lean. My reason for doing that is we believe our customers want more spare parts, want more engines from us, and that will give us the ability to first get our on-time delivery where it needs to be, and then second, allow us to expand capacity.
Will those efficiencies have any effect on price, say, of parts or finished engines, or will they just tend to hold the price?
My real goal is to give true value and price improvement to our customers. Right now we're fighting some headwinds, international metals prices, and we're mostly a metal component, unlike a lot of the aircraft manufacturers that have gone to composites and therefore aren't suffering the aluminum price run-ups and stuff. We are trying to fight that headwind. We did come out this year and announce that we're not increasing prices on our aftermarket rebuilt engines, and that's we were able to do that because of improvements in our reclamation area, recovering effectively, and being more effective in the new components we put in those engines, and we really want to get that extended across our OEM lines and everything.
Is there much you can do about that run-up in metals prices?
We're trying to do a lot of things, like work with our corporate entity to leverage bulk metals buying across the entire corporation. That will help. But right now, our volumes are not high enough to really drive the economies of scale that you might see in some of the real big boys like the Caterpillars, the auto companies, and that stuff. But we are fighting aggressively for that. We've got a new purchasing manager in here that is doing a bang-up job and going out and trying to work with our vendors to get every last iota of benefit and value added out of them. And we also intend to go to our OEMs, the aircraft manufacturers, and start to try and work and see where we can do value added for them that will help maybe take price out of their end, even if we can't get price out of our end, but net-net they end up in better shape.
What do the OEMs tell you they want right now? What's on the hit parade?
Probably first and foremost, alternative fuels. I think everybody's really starting to get worried about that equation, and also seeing the potential for international sales that having that product would bring them. That's first and foremost. I'd say second, in many cases, is electronic controls, and probably third, and not necessarily in exactly that priority strength, but value added. How do we truly improve the value stream between the entities, meaning can we do more on our manufacturing side to benefit them? It goes into packaging, layout, pre-mounting, a whole laundry list of things.
We'll get back to that heavy fuel question in a second, but we periodically interview shops and end-use customers about quality, parts quality, and on-time delivery. Continental has been up and down with this. We've heard complaints about parts taking weeks and sometimes months to arrive, and then we've heard overnight delivery is not a problem. Where do you stand in this process now, and is that a focus area for the company?
Simply, as I can put it, we are not meeting our customers' needs on on-time delivery and parts availability. I have made it a cornerstone for every one of my managers and employees that will get fixed, and it's not an easy fix. Turning a boat of this size is takes a little bit of room. But everyone at this company understands that the on-time shipment criteria is paramount for improvement, and every one of them is bought into that and are working as a team to try and get it to where we need to be and beyond.
Why did it get that way?
Lack of focus in the company. Focus on technology programs that we were doing, management turnover, a wide variety of things. It's never any one reason that gets you to these places. It's a whole hodgepodge of things, but the team has really come together. They understand it. They're measuring their metrics. They take pride in it. They're actually upset when they find out a customer has not been satisfied. Many of my ops people are now giving out their direct telephone numbers to key customers so that if they do have a problem. So when you look at this, I can't give you an answer that says this one reason caused us to get this way. A whole variety of things. And part of it is just the growth in the market over the last couple of years. It stagnated in 07, but we did see some volume changes and increases that I also think caught us off guard.
Let's talk a little bit about the FADEC. TCM has had one certified for 10 years now, but the market demand for this has been flat. Why is that so, and how do you expect to change that?
Well, I think part of it is our fault for not presenting it correctly, and although it's been certified, it really was not ready for prime time. And I think in many cases, rightly so, the OEMs were cautious about that. What we're doing to change that, we're working, well, first off, let me say that we shipped our 100th FADEC engine that is in regular production with an OEM, and that's something we haven't really made clear to people. Liberty Aircraft is exclusively building planes with our FADEC IOF 240 engine. We shipped the 100th engine to them. They've shipped their 100th airplane with a FADEC engine. And they've accumulated approximately 13,000 hours of flight time with FADEC. So in one respect, we've got it out there. In another respect, we do not have it widely introduced. And we have put a dedicated team on that. We have set specific deadlines. We are working with a couple of OEMs. Trying to ensure that we meet our obligations to get them very good product and help them launch that product effectively. I'm pleased to say that we're very close in the TC process on both an IO 550 engine and a TSIO 550 engine with the FADEC product in final production configuration.
As far as I know, the only other OEM that is out of the ground with this is Diamond for their D850. Are there other OEMs that have announced the intention to use the F version of the engine?
I'm going to be very cautious with that. There are two manufacturers, but I don't know that they have publicly announced it, or if they have, whether they have publicly announced specific launch dates. But we are working with two major high-volume OEMs and attempting to satisfy their proof of concept needs to lead to production launches mid to late this year.
I talked to Steve Smith at Aerosonde recently about the idea of the Alpha system. Can you fill us in on that? And that really ties in directly to how the FADEC may be marketed, I think.
Yeah. Well, the neat thing with the Alpha, or more specifically what we're calling level 1, 2, 3 diagnostics, is the fact that with the FADEC and the fact that it is electronic controls, runs through CPU, does have data logging capability, that you could go out and fly your airplane, come in, pull it into the mechanic. He can plug in his laptop or portable computer and read out engine performance results. And depending on which set of diagnostics he's running, we can start to really see what the engine's doing. Are there potential issues that we should address? And it also, you know, pilots saw some rough running. Okay, we can look at electronically and find out that number one spark plug on the number three cylinder was misfiring. So we can go pull that rather than tracing down and just kind of guessing at what the problem might be. So it's a very neat opportunity as this product really launches out in the industry that pilots can really start to do what auto companies do now when you pull into a GM Goodwrench and they just plug it up to the computer and it tells you everything about the car.
Do you think that's going to push it over the top as far as being attractive to potential buyers or OEMs for that matter?
I think so, because long term now, the FAA, I think, is going to be waiting for full proof, but it affords the potential to extend maintenance intervals. It affords the potential to make 100-hour and annual inspections much easier, and it affords the potential, once it's really out there and proven how valuable the diagnostics are, it affords the potential to extend the TBO on engines.
Will the elimination of 100 low lead improve the chances of FADEC making it in the market, do you think?
I wouldn't say it would hurt. I've talked extensively to my engineers really trying to understand the whole issue and the relationship of octane ratings, which is really what the low lead does, is boost your octane. Looking at issues of going to avgas, no lead, or whatever the correct terminology is for that, which would be roughly a 96 octane, or trying to go to the mid or high grade auto gas, auto fuels like the 89, 91 grades. FADEC won't hurt it because there is the potential to use FADEC to help tune, and I'm not technically oriented in this area. My degrees were in fluids and nuclear design, so piston engine design eludes me a little bit, but it affords the opportunity to tune things so that you can prevent the knocking, which is what the octane does, and to prevent early detonation and everything. And that has to do with spark advances, fuel injection concentrations, and everything else. So I think long-term it definitely will help it. My short answer is the best real answer is to get to the diesel or heavy fuel equation.
And where are you with the diesel project? You developed the four-cylinder, I believe it was, diesel under the GAP program. I know that it flew once, and then the project went on the shelf. Where are you with that?
Well, we have learned many things from that GAP program, and we use that as a cornerstone for our next stage. We are kicking off a major aerospace-specific engine design this year with some realistically aggressive targets. We'd like to ground demonstrate a prototype engine late this year, early next year, and move that aggressively towards type certification in late 2009 to early 2010. We've established a team bringing in some experts in that arena from elsewhere in the world to help us get going. We're bringing in some top-notch consultants to make sure that we're doing it right, and that's basically where we are. It is a major commitment of the corporation to move down that path.
That will be a diesel engine and a heavy fuel engine?
It'll be a heavy fuel Jet A diesel target.
What horsepower range?
The preliminary horsepower would be to hit our, which you highlighted in your some of your prelim questions to me, our sweet spot in that IO 550 series range. Mm-hmm. But our real goal is to have technology or horsepower range across the entire industry.
So that means we could see 100 horsepower diesel and maybe a 200 horsepower diesel and some up in the 300 to 350 range?
Exactly. But our first target will be in that higher horsepower range.
And I assume that would be a family-type engine? basically the same core design, but more displacement for more power?
Exactly.
Some years ago, along the same lines, TCM developed the Voyager liquid-cooled engine that was actually a fairly sophisticated engine, and it kind of disappeared. Any plans to bring something like that back into the market?
At this time, not that I can really speak to. It's not an area that I've really researched yet. It may have, because of the liquid fuel aspects, it may have some lessons learned for us on our diesel programs. But beyond that, again, we're focusing all of our resources right now on the Jet A.
How about the Honda project? Where does that one stand?
That's gone into a little bit of hiatus. It is going to go through a program review with me later this year, and perhaps if we talk again, I can give you a little bit more enlightenment on that.
In general, are you seeing much promise for future development on the gasoline side, or if I'm reading you right, you're saying that the real emphasis right now is on heavy fuel, but are there still gains to be made on the gasoline side, or is that pretty much sunset technology?
Well, I think it can't be viewed right now as sunset technology because we've got, 250,000 or some ungodly number of aircraft out there. And you're not going to swap those over overnight. So I think gasoline is here for many years to come, so we're not going to leave our existing customers in the lurch. We are looking at ways to deal with if we're forced out of low lead, and that's probably the right answer in the long term, but it's got to be done effectively so we don't ground a ton of planes overnight. But we're going to get forced out of that. So how do we deal with that loss of the octane enhancer and the low lead? Is there another option so you can still have a roughly 100 octane, in which case it's pretty much an invisible change for customers? But I wouldn't anticipate that, so we are looking at how do we deal with if we're forced down to an autogas grade in the 87, 89, 91, 93 octane rating, and then how do you deal with the variabilities that you find in autogas? Not every manufacturer puts the exact same things in it and does all that other stuff.
Last question. Lycoming has been successful in the experimental segment with a modest number of uncertified engines, or at least engines that are pitched at the experimental airplane market. Continental hasn't done much in this area. Are you considering doing much there? And also, how about the LSA segment?
Well, I'd say within my first 90 days, I've had a lot of things to look at, and I have not even begun to look at the experimental segment, so I can't really answer that question with anything clear. I would say that we see the LSA segment as very important to us, and I think some of the things that we're doing to meet that segment with our 200 and 240 series engines on weight reductions, FedExizing them, and some other things will give us some very viable offerings to meet the LSA opportunity, not only in our work with Cessna, but with many other manufacturers as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much for speaking with us today, Rhett.
Well, I appreciate the time and opportunity, and hope I was able to answer your questions.
And good luck with your flying lessons.
Oh, thank you very much.
Paul Bertarelli speaking with TCM's Rhett Ross. Today's audio cast was brought to you by IFR Refresher, a monthly review of IFR rules and procedures designed to hone your skills and reinforce your knowledge. Learn more or subscribe at www.ifrrefresher.com. Comments on today's audio cast welcome at audionews@avweb.com. For the AvWeb Audio News Team, I'm Mike Blakeney reporting. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.